Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline D'Est, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Hello and welcome to Write Through the Roof. So today I'm speaking with Oscar Demuriel. Hi Oscar, how are you going?
Hi Madeline, very well and you?
Oh, I'm very well. Just a little introduction about Oscar. So he is a writer of Victorian era paranormal mysteries. He's originally from Mexico City and he moved to the UK to complete a PhD in chemistry. He's a chemist, a violinist and translator, now based in Manchester. And the third book in his Frey and McGray series, A Mask of Shadows, is out now. So welcome to the program, Oscar.
Thank you. Lovely to be here, Madeline.
Excellent. Okay. So what I like to start off with is a few kind of warm-up questions. So think of it as like jogging on the spot, you know, some kind of star jumps.
All right. I've always been rubbish at those, but I'll do my best.
Now, do you write every day?
It depends how close my deadline is. I do try to write even a little bit, because as you said, it's kind of like a muscle. You can get kind of stiff if you don't do it often. But it really depends. If I'm close to a deadline, I will be writing 1,000 or 2,000 words a day. If I'm trying to recover from a deadline, I might not write something for like a week or something. But I do try to write at least a couple of hundred pages, a couple of hundred words every day.
That'd be pretty impressive if you did a couple hundred pages every day.
I wish I could.
People would be very jealous.
Yes.
So when you're going about your writing, are you a plotter or a pantser?
Because I do murder mysteries, you do have to plot them even if you don't want to. So I always have to know who did it and why and when and how. And all the clues arise naturally from that. Right now I'm writing something completely different. So I'm sort of enjoying that it's not a murder mystery. And just really just going on as it just comes to my head. It's been quite refreshing after like 5-6 years of plotting every little in my books.
So when you have that murder mystery plotted out like that, is there ever a time when you deviate and then have to recut your plan?
Yeah, it can happen. It hasn't happened to me that many times, but I remember for my last book, Mask of Shadows, I found a few details that were not historically accurate. And I had to kind of reshuffle things and change a few things of the conclusion. So if I try not to deviate, but I also try to leave some room for freedom when I'm actually writing the first draft.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so when you're writing, do you have a fuel of choice that spurs you on?
I have my sort of emergency fuel. I remember I had to do the final edits of A Mask of Shadows. There were a couple of major changes I had to do, and I had like 3 weeks to do that. Mm. And I remember my fuel of choice was wine and cheese. So it was 3 weeks of every evening having a glass of wine and a big block of cheese whenever I felt my brain wasn't working anymore. So I try not to do that much anymore because 3 weeks of couple of glasses of wine every night was it wasn't good for you.
Did the wine get an acknowledgement in the writer's notes at the end?
No, I should have said thanks to Malbec for their contribution to this book. This book wouldn't exist without them.
Cool. Okay, well, I think we've got to know you a bit better now.
Yeah.
So let's get a little more in depth. So how do you describe your writing, and are there any particular themes that you like to explore?
Well, I really like historical fiction and action, thrilling books. I think probably I would describe my writing like that. I remember the first book I read without anybody asking was Jurassic Park, and it was I was really scared to death by that book. I mean, the movie is nothing compared to the book. And I remember it was then that I said I want to become a writer, because I realized that books could give you thrills even worse than movies. And that's what I try to do in my writing.
Great. So in your writing journey from those first stories after you read Jurassic Park, has there been one thing that's really been the most helpful in improving your writing?
I think perhaps the best, I'm not going to call it a trick, I think the best you can do is apply some discipline. I remember when I was a teenager, I would just write whenever the mood came, sometimes leave my writing alone for months and months. And only come back when the muses came back to me. But I think I've been most productive now that I have actual deadlines and contracts, because I sit down every day. The whole thing is much more structured. I have a face for plotting and planning the story. I have a face for coming up with the characters, developing their personalities and whatnot. And then I have a more structured day when I'm actually writing the first draft. So I think it sounds really boring. I wish I could give you a more exciting answer, but I think discipline is key if you want to write a book.
Oh, absolutely. They don't write themselves, and I think people underestimate how much work's involved.
Oh, yeah, definitely. My ex-colleagues used to say, oh, you must be, sipping a glass of wine and just staring out the window and, you know, jotting down a few lines every now and then. And it's really not like that. I mean, the wine, as I've said, is involved, but it's more of an emergency thing. And after long, long hours of writing, that's also why people ask me where you get your ideas, so why you choose this topic instead of that. And I always try to write books that I would have enjoyed reading. Because after all the long hours that you devote to that, if you didn't like it that much, it would show in the writing, and also it would be like absolute torture.
So I'm interested in the fact that you sound like you've got a very structured process. And do you think that has anything to do with your science background?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm very, I'm going to say anal. when I'm plotting the certain parts of the stories, I even use Excel sheets. Like for the moment of the murder, I do this Excel sheet with characters. Time, so I know where each character is at every point in time. Say who's in the library, who had the candlestick, and all that. Even if I won't mention it in the story, at least I know all the characters are accountable in my head, and all the logistics of taking people in and out of the rooms and physical movements, how long it takes for poisons to work, which reminds me, being a chemist has been really useful for murder mysteries.
Yeah,
I know all the ways to kill people without leaving a trace. So actually, one of the this is not a joke. One of the clauses in my contract says you should not include recipes that people could use to cause harm. Which has, I found really funny, but also quite, I don't know, a bit daunting. In the book I just finished, I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is, but there's this bit of information. It's a very simple chemical process that people could apply. And I had to deliberately not mention anymore. It might even sound like I didn't do my homework properly, but I couldn't say anymore.
Oh, wow. So just going back to that whole setting up process. So before you even put your, sounds like before you even, you know, put the pen to paper to start writing. So how much time generally does it take you to fill out your Excel spreadsheet before you actually start your first draft?
It varies a lot. It depends on how complex each story would be. For A Mask of Shadows, which was really complicated, I had to do actually two Excel sheets, one for the overall story and one just for the last few chapters. I remember that I remember spent like a whole week doing the last spreadsheet for the last, I think it's the last 80 pages, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was really complicated. I had some proper headaches from that. For my second book, A Fever of the Blood, I remember the plot is a bit more straightforward. I don't want to say simpler, it's just more straightforward. That took me probably 2-3 days to get like the overall plot for the whole book. Mm. So yeah, it does vary a lot.
Great. So like, I have to admit that I have an absolute love for Victorian era paranormal mysteries. It's actually one of my favourite genres. So I've been doing a book review podcast, and it's just dawned on me that the books that I just keep coming back to, the same ones, the same type, and it's like, oh, that's why. It seems to be my...
Oh, you can see a pattern there.
Yeah, it seems to be my genre of choice. So what writers inspire you?
For these series of books, I remember reading a lot Bram Stoker, who is actually one of the suspects in my last book. I remember Dracula is an excellent book. It has aged really well. There are still passages that are like 100 plus years old, and you still read them and they still give you the creeps. Obviously I'm a huge fan of Sherlock Holmes. And Agatha Christie. Mm-hmm. One that inspired me a lot and is not a crime fiction writer is Isaac Asimov.
Oh, okay.
He was a genius. I can't remember how many hundreds of books he wrote in his life. And he wrote fiction, nonfiction, short stories and everything. He loved crime mysteries, actually. And he wrote this series of short stories called The Widower's Club. And he had these wonderfully brilliant riddles that were solved in each short story. And he also wrote this series of, they were like young adult books, called the Lucky Star series. The last in the series, it's called The Rings of Saturn. The science is completely outdated, of course, because he wrote them in the 1950s, I think. But that book, The Rings of Saturn, has the best twist I've ever read, ever. It's incredibly clever. And I've always strived to, even get a little bit close to that cleverness in my books.
Great. So tell me a little bit more about Mask of Shadows. So what inspired that? And were you trying anything different when you were writing it?
Well, it's basically the whole mystery is around this real Macbeth production from 1889. All the real Victorian personalities of theatre feature in the book. Bram Stoker, who was a theatre manager, at around those times he was just kind of coming up with what would later become Dracula. His theatre man, the lead of the theatre company, Henry Irving, was one of his inspirations for Dracula. Actually, if you Google Henry Irving, you'll see that he looks like a really creepy man, very thin, sharp cheekbones, and he just looks like Dracula. And also, there was this actress, Ellen Terry. If you Google Lady Macbeth, the first picture you will see is Ellen Terry in a green dress, fabulous, lovely dress, which was painted for that production. And basically, when they're on the final night in London, a banshee appears. I'm talking about my story now. A banshee appears to announce the death of someone related to the play, but she doesn't say who is going to die. Mm. So Frey and McGray have to both find out if it's a real threat or just a publicity stunt, or whether and also who is going to die. If the threat is real. Mm. So the different thing I wanted to try there was, it's not a whodunit, it's a who will do it, if you will.
Yeah. Great. And how did that go? Did you have to do something different in order to make it happen?
Well, there was this bit of kind of ping pong play with my editor, because he said you can't have a murder mystery without a murder almost at the very start. And I had to introduce a few elements to add more intrigue. I don't want to give you too many spoilers, but there's a couple of very creepy elements in the very first chapter. And it was a good exercise of how to build up tension without having an actual crime happening in the first couple of chapters. Something I wanted to depart from was pretty much all the crime books. The premise is a body was found, so I wanted to kind of flip it over. So to have people expecting a murder but not knowing when it's going to happen or who is going to die.
Great. Yeah, it's those well-trodden genre tropes that, you know, are fun to play with, but, you know, as your editor said, people still expect a body on page one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a bit of getting to our kind of middle, happy middle, where you have the tension but you're also not doing what everybody else is doing, or kind of fulfill expectations, but also offer something new.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what we all strive to do, isn't it?
Yep.
All right. So I might start to wrap up now and let you get back to your day. So what are you working on right now? You alluded to something completely different.
Well, I just submitted my fourth Frame, my grey book, which is going to be out in May. Mm-hmm. It's going to be called The Lock of the Dead, Lock as in Loch Ness. Mm-hmm. It's all set in the Scottish Highlands, and I love the cover, which has this awesome deer skull, and I'm also really, really proud of the story.
The whole series has a beautiful cover.
I've been really lucky to have some really cool designers, super talented guys working on these covers. I love them all. Mm. Actually, my favorite is this fourth one. I love them all, but I particularly like this fourth one. Mm. And also, I'm quite proud of this book, as I said. I wish I could tell you a lot of the story, more of the story. Basically, there's this isolated family that live in the Highlands next to this loch called Loch Maree, which has a lot of spooky legends around it. And it involves wine and this... there's some grapes and grapevines on the cover. So you can tell I like wine already. I might be giving myself a very bad reputation.
So the wine did get into the book.
The wine got into the book, yeah. And it's one of the main features of the book. And also there's a couple of Victorian twins, twin girls, who sort of do these experiments with light diffraction and make a few discoveries a few decades before their time. That's all I can tell you right now. And right now I'm working on a sort of historical kind of mashup set in Mexico. That's why I'm here at the moment, trying to do some research. It's all set in pre-Columbian times with Aztecs and Mayans and all the ancient civilizations playing around. I'm quite excited about that.
Mm, that sounds pretty intriguing.
Hopefully you can interview me for that one as well.
All right, you're on. Okay.
We're on.
Yeah, we're on. Okay. So I might wrap up there and let you get back to your research, which, I'm sure you, considering that you write kind of historical fiction, I'm sure you actually enjoy that just as much as the writing.
I'm at that nice honeymoon stage right now.
Good, good. So if people are interested in finding out more about you, where can they find you online and where can they find your work?
Well, my webpage is www.oscardemuriel.com, all one word. I'm in Twitter as well, with just Oscar Demuriel, at Oscar Demuriel, all one word. You can find my books in Amazon. They're available in Australia, New Zealand, Canada. They've been translated to German, Czech, Japanese, and now Spanish.
Did you do the translation for the Spanish? Did you do your own?
I did, yes. And it was harder than I expected.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, I didn't make things easier for myself. Because, Frey is very English and Magrae is very Scottish. So pretty much all the humour revolves around the accents and the slang and all that. So I had to almost make up a Scottish dialect that would apply in Spanish. it was cool. It was quite fun to do.
Good. Okay. Is there anywhere else where people can find you, or is that's the main places, Amazon and your Twitter and your own website?
I'm also on Instagram. I'm quite enjoying that. And also it's just look for Oscar de Muriel and you'll find me there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been really, really fun.
Thanks to you, Madeline. Lovely to answer your questions.
Tip of this week is something that I'm currently using daily, and this is the text-to-speech function. Now, one of the general tips you might hear about writing is to read your work aloud, because when you're really deep in the weeds, you can't see the errors, because your mind just glosses over them. But you can definitely hear them. But somehow when I try this, I make the same mistake and insert words where I think they should go, without reading the text as written. And this is where the text-to-speech function is really helpful. There's no cheating. I find it especially useful for grammatical errors, clumsy sentences, and missing words. Now, I think I'm a better storyteller than I am a writer, and I'm by no means a grammar expert. So I find this really vital to ensure my writing is as good as it can be. So I just highlight a passage, press start, and my words are read back to me. Now, you can find it under your operating system of choice, sometimes under accessibility, or there are many plugins or apps that you can download. And if you're using Scrivener, Scrivener also has a speech function. And these days you can choose your voices too, and it doesn't always sound like Stephen Hawking is reading the audiobook. So text-to-speech has become a really integral part of my editing process, and I hope that's something that you'll give a go too. Thanks for listening to Write Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?